The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today via video conference by Judge Toth and Judge Falvey. And we're here for the matter of Victor Manuel Aviles Rivera versus Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs. It's docket number 19-5969. And we are dealing with a question relating to the intersection between the constructive possession rule and the direct review lane of the Appeals Modernization Act. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
My name is Robert Jackson. I'm here representing Victor Aviles Rivera, the appellant.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson.
And Secretary... Good morning, Your Honors. This is Omar Youssef for the Secretary, and with me at second chair is Sarah Fusina.
Thank you, Mr. Youssef and Ms. Fusina. Each party will have 30 minutes to present their arguments, as you know. Mr. Jackson, would you like to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
I would like to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, we will make that happen. And Mr. Jackson, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning again, and may it please the court. Mr. Aviles Rivera served honorably in the United States Army with boots on the ground service in Vietnam. He suffers now from hypertension related to his exposure to herbicides in Vietnam, and this is supported by the record. As I will discuss, there are two reasons why this case should be remanded. First, the November 2018 NAS update had reported sufficient evidence of a link between hypertension and herbicide exposure was constructively before the board, and the board erred when it failed to address the update in the adjudication of my client's claim. Second, the VA's actions in this case also failed to meet the requirements of fair process. For example, it simply cannot be fair process that the board member would have to rely on a negative medical opinion to deny the claim when he knows that the probative value of that opinion is in question based on the materials that are constructively before him. In other words, the court is being asked to create a duty to ignore materials that would otherwise be made available as part of the record pursuant to the constructive possession doctrine. Throughout this entire appeal process, our position has remained unchanged. We have consistently argued that the November 2018 NAS update reporting sufficient evidence of a link between hypertension and herbicide exposure was constructively before the board prior to the August 2019 board decision, and that the board should have addressed the update in its decision. Not only is our position supported by the court's decision in Bell and its four factors, but also the recent federal court decision in Azibio to confirm that our position is correct. In our briefing documents, we have argued that under Bell and Azibio 2, the 2018 NAS update regarding, again, the positive link between herbicide exposure and hypertension was constructively before the board when it issued its August 2019 decision. That is, number one, it is undisputed that the 2018 update was in the possession and control of the secretary and the board. Number two.
Counsel, sorry, I'm going to kind of jump in here. So I want to ask you about VEMA, about the new, about whether the constructive possession doctrine fits within VEMA. And then, you know, Mr. Aviles Rivera chose the direct review lane, right? And whether and how maybe constructive possession sort of focuses on that. What I asked you about is a case that we decided called Andrews a couple months ago. And basically we held that on a remand to the direct review lane, that a veteran just simply cannot submit evidence that the RO hasn't seen, or that the board just can't consider evidence. What do you have to say about those two questions, about VEMA and about Andrews?
Well, Your Honor, we certainly have different facts here. This is not a remand case, although the updates in general were remanded to be considered in April 2017. It was remanded for the board to consider the updates in the April 2017 remand. But that's not our issue here. And even in that situation, we're going to eventually argue that because of the uniqueness of the NAS reports that are dedicated to the VA's, information database, that the VA was in constructive possession, not only in this case, but perhaps even in the Andrews case. It's something that's part of the VA's collective knowledge of activities associated with the impact of Agent Orange and herbicide exposure in Vietnam. So although, you know, that's not exactly on point, I don't think, for our situation where, you know, the court can, not the court, but the court can order specifically the content or what should be prescribed in the remand order. This is a different situation. And we would argue again that this collection of information and materials are separate than the documents that would be considered under 7113 AMA submission evidence submission format.
Mr. Jackson, do you have any authority for that? I mean, if we were going to write an opinion like that, what would we rely on to make that kind of distinction that you're arguing here?
Well, I think if we look at the statute, Your Honor, the statutes are kind of separately defined. 7113 uses language such as claim processing language such as submission, documents to be submitted, and the purpose was actually to translate from the old legacy system to the system that hopefully would be more modernized and more streamlined. So it's more like a claim processing system rather than, as we're arguing, that the jurisdictional basis of 7104A it still remains intact. That is, it's a broader collection of not only evidence, but also information. And that information can be constructively before the board as a result of the board, the overall responsibility of the board to fully adjudicate all of the information and evidence that's before it, and not to exclude any of that information and or evidence that's before it. So there are two separate items, Your Honor. Again, the claim processing rules associated with 7113, which when you look at it, you'll see it talks about timetables and getting information in and things like that. But it doesn't talk about the expansive jurisdiction of the board in terms of being able to adjudicate particular issues. And our argument is that, you know, the uniqueness of the NAS report and this entire design is to inform the VA about specific issues, that it's more than evidence. It's actually materials and documentation that would fall under the board's jurisdictional. Did I respond to your question?
Mr. Jackson, I'm going to hop in just real quick. I mean, I appreciate that it's properly a claims processing rule, but I mean, mandatory claims processing rules are still mandatory. That it doesn't, I mean, it still could seem to exclude the language, albeit it wouldn't deprive the court of jurisdiction, or excuse me, of the board of jurisdiction.
Well, Your Honor, I think if you look, again, you look at, from our perspective, the congressional intent of this is that they're separate. I mean, there's no statute that says that the AMA and the process under the AMA and the process under 7104A collapse together. They're actually a separate process. Again, once again, one is a claim process, the other is a jurisdictional authority, and it's broader. And if Congress wanted to say solely that AMA is a jurisdictional lane, it would have said so. It hasn't dedicated it as a jurisdictional lane. 7113 jurisdictional lane. It hasn't done that. It's essentially a claim processing system that actually could be waived. But jurisdictional authority under 7104A or 7104 cannot be waived. That's a distinction we can also look at. And so if it was jurisdictional, 7113 was jurisdictional, you wouldn't be able to waive it. I mean, that's another way to look at it.
So the fact that Mr. Aviles Rivera signed the RAMP opt-in form, which gave him some information, and he not only signed that, he opted out of legacy and opted into the AMA, but also chose the higher level review mm-hmm. option where he wouldn't, I think it says that he understood that his case would be decided based on the evidence that was before VA when it made its decision, something like that. Are we supposed to consider that to be meaningless, or he, I mean, it does. Well, I have to tell you, it does disturb me that I don't think he was represented when he did this.
That's right, Your Honor.
You didn't really raise any issues like that in your brief. And he did sign the form and check the appropriate box. And so why shouldn't he just have to live with the decision he made, which, by the way, the secretary argues he's not really prejudiced here because he can go down and open a supplemental claim and have the 2018 NAS report considered.
I think there are a couple of things. As the court knows that at the time he signed on to the program, it was a pilot program. And I think that it was early in the process, and a lot of things were uncertain. And so, and as you mentioned, he was not represented. And I do know that almost monthly he was writing to the VA asking, can you process my claim? Can you process my claim? And he was essentially under stress and pressure of trying to get his claim processed. And I'm not sure, also because he was not represented, I can't speak to his true knowledge and understanding of what he was doing. But again, I think if you look at that time and period of time, many of the lawyers and even the VA was kind of trying to sort through what was meant by opting into the process. In fact, I don't think the regs were even drafted or prepared. So it's a pilot program, a lot of uncertainty. He got involved in it. As the record indicates, he signed on, but I'm not sure he was informed about the impact in particular, I'm sure he wouldn't have signed on if he knew that the 2018 the NAS report, which was beneficial to him, would be excluded from the record. It would not be considered by the board. He certainly wouldn't have signed on to that. So I don't think he was making an informed decision.
Can you speak to the last piece that the chief asked about the prejudice? I mean, if he files a supplemental claim, is he entitled to the exact same relief?
I think, you know, look at it a couple ways, Your Honor. You know, again, with the uncertainty that was going on at that time, the secretary has more options than he does in this case. And the secretary could could have essentially, because the document was before the board, the board member could essentially granted the benefits. So, and you know, my client didn't know anything about the document. Again, it's because not only he just was not informed, but also, you know, the uncertainty of the program. So, I mean, in terms of the option that could provide relief for my client, I mean, going back through the process, I mean, he's, you know, I know it's not necessarily important. He's 73 years old and he's in bad health. Generally, he lives in Puerto Rico and he's still suffering financially from the hurricanes that were there. So he I mean, he's financially stressed, physically ill, and he's elderly, and we're going to ask him to get back in line again to, you know, wait his turn, when in fact the best is easy for the secretary to look at the document and say, or the board member to look at the document and say, okay, let's just grant the benefits because he's eligible for it. I mean, these are just facts of the case. So, I mean, the question is, should the burden be placed on the veteran in this instance, or should the secretary just provide relief here, which is easily done and readily available? Did I respond to your question, Your Honor?
Yes. Yeah. You know, and something, I mean, I'm going to kind of follow on what you're saying. And sorry, Chief, if I'm stealing.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I'm here. It strikes me that some of your argument is that the NAS update shouldn't really be treated as evidence, right? That it should be treated something like a guidance document, right? That would be, the agency would have a kind of immediate sort of knowledge of, as opposed to, I mean, for instance, there's no doubt that if Mr. Aviles Rivera had like a favorable private treatment record or something, that would not be admissible because that's evidence and the RO would close that. And it strikes me that what you're saying is the way that you're describing the NAS report is that it's not really something like a piece of evidence that develops later, but something more like a guidance document.
I think you're not only, Your Honor, your this court's decision in Exhibio and the Federal Circuit's decision in Exhibio talked about the uniqueness of this document. I mean, this court's decision went into great lengths about how unique this is, that the VA not only ordered that and Congress ordered that the research be made available, inform the VA with respect to Agent Orange diseases, Agent Orange, the effect of Agent Orange on veterans. And so it is beyond just evidence. It's documents are readily available. The reports are routinely prepared and given to the VA. Everything that you said is correct. So it is beyond, it's substantive materials. It's beyond just evidence, and it's foundational to the decision-making process for Agent Orange cases. And so you would think that not only, you know, again, it's designed, prepared, paid for by the VA, by the secretary. And so you would think that the secretary would always reference it every time they see a case that's claiming some type of some type of illnesses or disease or disability based upon exposure to Agent Orange or herbicides while serving in Vietnam.
Now, Judge Tuth, do you have a follow-up?
You know, just real quick, Chief, thanks. So are you aware of any authorities that have treated it like something other than just, you know, an evidentiary issue?
Let me see. Let me think about that.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. I mean, you can come back and rebuttal if you
just Your Honor, why don't I either on rebuttal or if I'm permitted, I can submit a supplemental brief or comments with respect to that. Is that possible?
I'd prefer rebuttal if that's
it. Okay.
You know, we've got clerks, we can look.
Okay. All right, Your Honor, I will do that. I'll do rebuttal.
Now, Mr. Jackson, as to that very point that Judge Toth was talking about, doesn't Eusebio talk about the NAS report as evidence? It calls it evidence. And so I understand you're trying to kind of make a distinction between the kind of evidence that that is referred to under the AMA regulations, that, you know, that the case is going to be decided based on the evidence that was before the AOJ, but you're trying to put it into another category of evidence, but you admit that Eusebio talks about the NAS report as evidence.
It does talk about that, Your Honor, but I think the distinction here is that it's not, not 7113 type evidence. It's not something that would be considered to, let me put it two ways. One is that even if my client understood that the documents were available and that before the file closed on his case with the regional office, even if he knew that the report was there and it was available and he submitted it, the board and the secretary nevertheless would have constructive possession of it. So it's more than just simply evidence. It's something that is unique to the foundation of claims for veterans who are seeking disability as a result of herbicide exposure. So it's beyond evidence. I mean, it is evidence. It's any kind of evidence that, for example, well, I shouldn't say any kind, but certainly it's evidence that is not under 7113 submission documents or submission rules and regulations, I guess.
Uh-huh. What I'd also be interested in hearing you discuss a little bit more about, let's add 5 minutes to the time, Ms. Breckay. Okay, so I'd also be interested to hear more about that distinction on rebuttal, that distinction that you're trying to make. But moving on, so the Military Veterans Advocacy case that came out on July 30th of 2021 and found that certain parts of the AMA regulations were unlawful, found that indeed an appellant could kind of simultaneously appeal to this court and file a supplemental claim down at the RO, the AOJ, whatever you want to call it. Now, has Mr. Aviles Rivera taken advantage of that and filed a supplemental since that decision issued?
To my knowledge, he has not. I don't. He lives in Puerto Rico. I'm unfortunately language challenged. I don't speak Spanish, so I go through an interpreter. So I haven't my last contact with him was as far as I know, he hasn't done that. But as you know, veterans sometimes will go on and do things, and then you find out later that seeking to get their benefits, and so I don't think so.
Thank you.
Should I continue? Okay. In our briefing documents, we've argued that Bell and Eusebio 2, that under Bell and Eusebio 2, the NAS updates regarding the positive links between herbicide exposure and hypertension are constructively before the board, and that that number one, is undisputed that the update is in the possession of the board. Number two, it's relevant and reasonably related to the records, reasonably related to parts of the record. Number three, there are clearly updates that are outcome determinative. And number four, the materials were not considered by the board. While the arguments have shifted between the initiation of briefing due to the issuance of the Federal Circuit's decision in Eusebio 2, the secretary now argues that 7113 AMA evidentiary record was closed as of my client's opting in to the AMA claim process in June 2018. And for this reason, the secretary contends that the board was prohibited from evaluating the NAS 2018 update under 38 U.S.C. Section 7113. entitled, as you know, Evidentiary Record before the Board of Veterans' Appeal. The 7113 AMA Evidentiary Record Claim Rule outlines two things. Number one, the period of time which a veteran makes evidence submission to be considered as part of the claim under the AMA claim process. And also, number two, the period of time that the VA is on the hook to help secure other records like those through the duty to assist. However, while 7113 AMA evidentiary record may have been closed as to as of the date of the regional office decision in this case revisits Bell and presents the court with the question, what is the content of the record under AMA? We contend that the content of the record is not just limited to 7113 AMA evidentiary record and the evidence submission discussed in 7113, but that the board is also required to adjudicate the claim based on the record in its entirety under its jurisdictional statute, 38 U.S.C. Section 7104A. Section 7104 jurisdictional statute reads, decisions of the board shall be based on the entire record in the proceeding upon consideration of all evidence and material of record. This means that in our case, the record would include the November 2018 report because the jurisdictional authority of 7104A and the doctrine of constructive possession. I see my time has expired. Would you like me to continue?
We've already added an additional 5 minutes. Let's see whether any of the judges have any questions. Judge Toth, do you have any additional questions?
No, I don't for now.
Okay, and Judge Falvey?
I don't, other than on rebuttal, I'd really like to hear more about, I don't think you answered Judge Toth's question about prejudice and his ability to submit a supplemental claim. I'd like to explore that with you. I'd also like you to consider and address for me on rebuttal. In Yuzubio, the Federal Circuit also noted that the constructive possession doctrine was really a remedy for duty to assist violations, and the board has no duty to assist when you choose the direct review lane. So I'm wondering how you square your position with the Federal Circuit's view of the constructive possession doctrine. But thank you very much for your argument today.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. And Mr. Youssef, you may proceed.
Good morning again, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The court should affirm the board's decision here for three reasons. First, the Federal Circuit's holding in Yuzubio 2 does not control here because the current appeal is under the AMA system, which forecloses the board's ability to have constructive possession of the 11th NES update that was published after the rating decision that is at issue here. Second, an affirmance is proper because it would abide by express congressional intent regarding the scope of the record and the duty to assist, while still allowing appellant to submit a supplemental claim without prejudice as to the possible effective date. This is because the AMA allows for greater variation and puts more power into the hands of claimants and allowing them to choose how they wish to process their appeals. And third, and contrary to the arguments that were made in the principal briefing, we believe that the agency substantially complied with the remand instructions and the board correctly found that there's not sufficient evidence of a nexus in this case. Your Honors, as to the first point, appellant's decision to opt into RAMP had the effect of foreclosing the board's ability to have constructive possession of the NES report. Yuzubio 2 must yield to the expressed intent of Congress that limited the scope of the record and the application of the duty to assist. On this, Your Honors, we would make three interrelated subpoints. First, under 7113, the evidentiary record before the board shall be limited to the evidence of record at the time of the AOJ decision on appeal. In this case, the The decision was issued in September 2018, and the NAS report was not published until November 2018, which is 2 months after the rating decision. Because the report was not part of the record at the time of the rating decision, we do not get to constructive possession, essentially.
Now, Mr. Youssef, Mr. Jackson was arguing that the NAS reports in general, but this 2018 NAS report specifically, is of a different character than the types of evidence that were intended to be encompassed by the new AMA rules and the limitation on the evidence of record term. What's your response to that?
Your Honor, we would respectfully disagree with that. We think that the NAS report, and in general, any NAS report that's generated would classify as evidence for purposes of, just in general, whether it's by statute or consideration of the agency. We would note as support, as you pointed out, Chief Judge Bartley, that the Federal Circuit in Eusebio 2 noted and described the reports as evidence. And we would also submit.
Right. But he was saying it was a different character. And, you know, it's not the kind that was intended to be proscribed by those new rules.
Correct. And we believe that there's no support for that argument. We don't see that. We would also submit that there was an earlier discussion about 7104 and 7113. We think that both of those have to be read harmoniously, and that the NES reports don't fit into the type of evidence that is described in 7104C.
Well, it's, I get you, but it's kind of funny that like the AMA was supposed to, you know, increase speed of decision-making of veterans' claims, and yet he's going to have to, you know, go back and start again, as Mr. Jackson said. He's going to have to go back, get in the supplemental claims lane. Perhaps, you know, because hypertension hasn't been added to the presumptive list, maybe have another exam that considers the 2018 NAS report. You know, I don't know what's your response to that. I mean, that doesn't seem very efficient. It doesn't seem very fast for Mr. Aviles-Rivera to go through that process again.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, we would submit that the supplemental claim option exists for a situation really like this, and it provides an option for him and an avenue to have his claim heard, which may actually be faster than going back on a remand. We also would submit that the AMA allows for more choice, and the veteran can choose how he wants to process his appeal, and they can opt in and out of whichever docket they choose. And as you pointed out earlier, as a Federal Circuit held, they can file a supplemental claim at any point in time. And there's no indication, Your Honor, in this case that that's been filed, even though he has that right.
Well, as to your point that he could file this at any time, I mean, now, like you, I'm learning all of the new AMA regs, but I know that one of them, I think it was 2500, I think, but it might be a different number, 3.2500, does not allow it didn't allow simultaneous, right? But it requires a continuous pursuit. If the veteran files an appeal here, it requires a continuous pursuit of the claim, and that the veteran file, now that he has filed an appeal with the court, which is considered continuous, a continuous pursuit, he would have a year after our decision to file a supplemental claim. So he can't just, he would have to wait for a decision from us. He can't just withdraw it under that reg. He can't just withdraw his court appeal and say, oh my gosh, like I can pursue this down below. He has to follow it through to conclusion here at the court. That's what the reg seems to provide.
Right, Your Honor, but we don't believe that that survives the military.
Oh, so not only was 3.2500B voided by the VMA, the MVA decision, but also C. Is that your? Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. The requirement to have the appeal withdrawn was essentially. found no longer applicable by the Federal Circuit. So our position is that the appellant can file a simultaneous claim, even mm-hmm. though a current appeal is pending mm-hmm. before a federal court.
Uh-huh. And that decision came out after you filed your brief, after you filed your supplemental.
I believe so. I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly.
Okay. I got you. That's a new development, though. I mean, under the old process, he would have had to wait
right.
until this court issued a decision and then been free within the next year to file a supplemental.
Right. Admittedly, Your Honor, the agency is, because the holding is so recent, the agency is still trying to enact the proper procedures to enforce what the Federal Circuit discussed. But that is our position, generally.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Your Honor, going back to the points that I was making, the fact that the record closes following the issuing of the AOJ decision is important because the AMA draws a clear distinction between possible errors that may have occurred before the rating decision on appeal and those that occurred after, with remedies and evidentiary development possible for pre-decisional errors and not allowed for those that occurred following the rating decision. And third, Your Honor,
if the sequence were different and the NAS decision, say, came out a couple months before the AOJ decision, what's the agency's position on whether it would be in the constructive possession of the AOJ?
Your Honor, so our position would be essentially that we generally don't need to get to that here because it's not the facts of this case. But we think that the statute draws a clear distinction that following the rating decision, the constructive possession doctrine cannot apply, but allowing for the possibility for evidence to possibly be constructively before the agency, provided it meets the factual requirements of the specific case, while also complying with the Federal Circuit's standard that they the clarification that the Federal Circuit provided of the judicial doctrine of the constructive possession doctrine in UZV02. So we think that both those would have to be met, but that is such a fact intensive inquiry with that we don't think that it's necessarily ripe for consideration.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. Your Honor, Congress intended to limit the scope of the record and the duty to assist following the AOJ decision. And this becomes clear when 5103A and 7113 are read in conjunction. They essentially establish the default rule that the record should be closed. And we would submit that it should be strictly closed, with some very narrow exceptions allowed in two of the other dockets, the hearing and the evidence submission dockets. In Andrews, Your Honors, the court acknowledged that Congress intended to close the record and that when congressional intent is explicit, that the court is bound by that. And we would submit that that applies here, especially because both claimants in each case opted into the direct review claim. And Your Honors, the second reason for affirmance, as I briefly touched on again, was the possibility for the supplemental claim. Again, we think that this is the proper remedy because one, we would be abiding by congressional intent regarding the record and the duty to assist while still allowing the appellant to file a claim, a supplemental claim. And again, Your Honor, this is in conjunction or this follows the intent of the AMA, which was to provide a better framework, which promotes greater efficiency, that ends the continuous churn of evidentiary development that happened below. And this gives greater choice and variation to the appellant to choose how they wish to process their appeal moving forward. So we would submit that option is still available to the claimant to have the agency consider that. And Your Honor, the last reason, the third and final reason that we submit an affirmance is warranted here is because the agency substantially complied with the remand instructions as we argued in our principal brief, the remand instructed the VA examiner to consider the NAS reports, which suggested a limited association, and we think that the examiner sufficiently did so, and that the board correctly relied on that exam. Your Honors, if there are no further questions, we would submit that an affirmance is proper here, you know, for the reasons that I articulated here and in our principal brief and our supplemental brief, as it would comply with congressional intent while also allowing the appellant a possible remedy for his claim.
Judge Toth, do you have further questions?
I don't. Thank you.
Judge Falvey?
I don't. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Youssef.
Thank you.
And Mr. Jackson, you may move ahead with rebuttal. You seem to be.
Let's do it again. There we go. There we go. Sorry about that. And I was listening to counsel's the secretary's argument. At no time did I hear the secretary say that the process that, and particularly in this case, was fair. There was nothing in the statement, and I don't think the secretary would even argue that it's fair. You look at the facts here that we have information readily available sitting on the veteran law judge desk, and he's being asked or she's being asked to just ignore it. You know, even though the remedies is available there. I mean,
sorry to interrupt, but is this a constitutional argument you're making?
No, this is not. This is simply, Your Honor, this is simply fair process, not fair due process, which I think was what you're referring to in terms of constitutional argument. This is fair process. I mean, this is a, you know, I think the courts, at least the Federal Circuit has said on a number of occasions that this is allegedly a veteran-friendly process, that the objective here is to make sure that veterans who are seeking disability benefits receive them in a fair and expeditious manner. And here the secretary was asking the veteran to get back in line when the remedy is readily available. I'm trying to, you know, think about, just visualize an AL, the administrative law judge or the veteran law judge being put in a dilemma where they know that the information they have and that in front of them, but is incorrect. But the secretary saying, no, you need to ignore that information. You need to not only ignore it, but you need to deny the claim that's being sought by the veteran. That seems to be just unreasonable, unfair, and unjust. And certainly not, I would suspect, not the design of the veterans benefit process under any congressional intent. So, there are at least two options available to the secretary in that instance. One option is that simply the administrative law judge, rather than the secretary now saying, well, just prohibit it from considering, it could just remand it back to the regional office for further development. I mean, the secretary has that provision. There are provisions that would allow outside of the AMA that would allow the veteran law judge simply to remand it, knowing that I have this document here that says, that calls into question the evaluation of the examiner. That's number one. Number two, it could simply grant it because they know, I mean, technically could grant it, but certainly with the prohibition by the secretary, the administrative law judge would be reluctant to do that. But we were able to find at least one case through our research where almost identical, where the administrative law judge did remand it. Essentially said there was looking at the ALJ decision, a pre-decisional failure to comply with the duty to assist, basically. created an option that allowed it to be remanded. But that type of gymnastics is unnecessary. Only thing had to do, only thing the secretary had to do was simply, you know, allow the administrative law judge to adjudicate the case based upon all the information that's available. This isn't something that's outside the scope of reality.
Mr. Jackson, can I just maybe redirect your attention a little bit? Now, Judge Toth and I were interested in hearing more about this, your argument that this is, there's a distinction between the NAS report and the kind of evidence that is referred to by the AMA rules. And I know that Judge Falvey had asked you to address the fact that the secretary was arguing no harm, no foul here, because you can, Mr. Aviles Rivera can go down and submit a supplemental claim within a year of the court's decision. So if you could address those 2 points.
Okay. Let's address the supplemental first. And as I indicated previously, and even as the counsel for the secretary indicated, yeah, that's available. That certainly is available. And we also agree that there's no duty to assist. There's not, you know, we don't think that under the AMA, there's a duty to assist. But this is not about the duty to assist. It really is not about the supplemental provision. This is essentially about what's available to the secretary to remedy in a veterans-friendly, claimant-friendly environment. How do we get results in an expeditious manner for the veteran when it's readily available? So that's I may not be answering directly to the duty to assist issue, but we agree that there's no duty to assist under the AMA. But the secretary still has the ability to remand the case, or at least release the veteran law judge, so that they are not prevented from exercising what's thoroughly within their prerogative, which is to remand the case back to the regional office, which has been done at least in one case that we found. So, I mean, if we were to look at, this case compared to the other one, certainly there's a disparity in the treatment of someone similarly situated in my client, because the veterans law judge in that instance did remand it based upon duty to assist failure. So, it's been done once, and I'm not sure.
Can you clarify? That was a case where the veteran had signed signed up for RAMP and chose the direct review lane at the board.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. And the veteran law judge received the case almost identical. It was at November 2018 NAS report was not part of the AMA record, but because the veteran law judge knew that the report was available, simply remanded the case back to the regional office and said, well, you know, the duty to assist should apply here. Consider, send it back to the examiner, have them take a look at it, the document, the NAS report, 2018 report, and then give me an opinion based upon that rather than something that's incomplete. So, I mean, that, and, you know, certainly my client wasn't treated that way. So there's some disparity in treatment there. There was another question, Your Honor, and I...
you were going to address on rebuttal the difference between the NAS report and the type of evidence that is covered under the AMA rules when they refer to the decision being limited, the evidence being considered being limited to the evidence of record.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor. So, if you look at the statute, the AMA provisions under 1713 And you'll see it, the submission of evidence is about submission of documents by the veteran or by the claimant. Okay. And we're talking about things that are beyond that under 7104A, that is the broader and larger picture of materials, if you will. And the statute says that. If we take a look at the statute, 7104A, jurisdictional statute, reads that the board shall base it, the decision should be based on the entire record in the proceedings and upon consideration of evidence, which is a separate category, talks about evidence, and materials of record. And then we can also, if you will, Your Honor, if you take a look at 70, another provision which supports this is section 5107B regarding the consideration of by the secretary of the benefit of the doubt standard. The language there also says the secretary shall consider all information, and then specifies some additional thing, lay and medical evidence of record. Again, the distinction is clear. There's evidence and there's information, all information beyond that, which that would be available to the law judge or the court for that matter.
Mr. Jackson, so, your time has expired. You want to just close with a sentence?
Sentence, thank you. And let me, if I can have 1 minute, I can give a summary quickly of what we're, can I do that, Your Honor? Court?
No more than 1 minute, Mr. Jackson. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. In summary,
you could add a minute.
Okay, thank you. In summary, the November 2018 update is a very specialized, dedicated VA reference record material, which was constructively before the board. The board can't say they didn't have it. They didn't deny they didn't know anything about it. And the board was not prohibited from considering it under 7113. And because the board's jurisdictional statute of 7104 contemplates something more than just a limited, if you will, claim processing materials that fall under 7113 of the AMA evidentiary record. And, I mentioned a few minutes ago that there's other.
Mr. Jackson, your time has expired.
Oh, my time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your arguments to both parties. And the case is submitted for consideration and we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. The court is in recess.